A little, he said, shrugging. I thought I would be safer if I didn't want anybody for more than something physical. I thought I could keep all the pieces of me separate. The dad, the man, the guy who wears a poncho to avoid a cafeteria food bath. The parts of me that laugh every time you open your mouth. The pieces of me that want to tear your clothes off. The even more complicated bits that sit in awe when you take down snotty soccer moms. But I can't. It's stupid to try. He dropped his head to her shoulder. I loved my wife. I'm always going to love her. And for a long time, I thought that meant punishing myself for outliving her. He tipped his forehead against hers. I don't want to do that anymore. She palmed his jaw, tilting her head as she rubbed a thumb over his chin. So don't. The corner of his mouth lifted in a sad half-smile. He leaned forward and pressed a hesitant kiss against her lips. And then another, and another, each hungrier than the last. She rolled onto her knees, making him rise to meet her, returning Mo's kisses with equal energy. She clutched at his hair, pulling him closer as the tension seemed to bleed out of his body. The hands around her back relaxed and slid along her ribs. The kisses that had been so fervent just a minute before slowed into a lazy dance. Kyle looped his arm under her legs and pulled them up from what could end up being a precarious position on the dock. He hitched her legs around his hips and walked her toward the house. And given the firm weight she felt wedged against her as they moved, she had a pretty good idea she wasn't being invited in for sweet tea. Girls? She murmured against his lips, rubbing her cheek on the scruff of his beard. Sleepovers, he said, catching the line of her jaw between his teeth. You really don't have to carry me all the way to the bedroom, she said, as he managed to open his back door with one hand. Oh, thank God, he said, dropping her to her feet. I know it was romantic as hell, but I was reaching muscle failure somewhere on the back porch. She snickered, tugging on his shirt tail as she backed down his hallway. He kicked off his shoes, and then bent over to yank at the button of her jeans. Giggling, she nudged off her own shoes and pressed him against the hallway wall to tackle his pants. Stepping through the bedroom door, she yelped, jerking her foot up from the floor and nearly kneeing Kyle in the crotch. He dodged, throwing himself against the wall to avoid the crushing blow. What in the hell? She cried, hopping on her good leg while she tried to dig a tiny sharp object out of the sole of her foot. Is this a tiny hooker shoe? She said, holding up the offending bit of pink plastic. Barbie shoes, Kyle said, shaking his head and supporting her arms while she massaged her foot. Everybody bitches about Legos, but those mini platforms are the real danger to parental feet. You get wordy when you're drunk. Not that drunk. Here, let me help. Margo cried out when Kyle lifted her off her feet, but instead of sweeping her up bridal style, he swung her onto his back and carried her piggyback toward the bed. It was unexpected, like most things about Kyle. She noticed that while there were a lot of dust catchers and photos in the common areas of the house, there was only one photo here, one of Hazel and June smiling up from a pile of pumpkins. The room would have been considered Spartan if not for the wide, inviting bed situated in front of a picture window. Moonlight streamed through the glass as he tugged at the catch on her bra. I haven't brought anyone back here, he told her. Ever. I understand. It's been a while since I've done this, she admitted as he pushed her onto the bed. She scooted back on the mattress as he crawled along with her, caging her against the bed. It's like falling off a bicycle, he promised, then frowned. Or something like that. He trailed his lips over her jawline, and she turned her head so he could get better access to her neck. Her panties disappeared over his shoulder. Warmth flooded her middle, and she sighed at the lovely, slippery sensations between her thighs. She made eye contact with Hazel and Juniper's photo in the frame by the bed, and winced. Kyle lifted his head and saw where she was staring. He reached over and flipped the picture frame face down on the nightstand. When she arched an eyebrow, He shrugged. The heat of his fingers burned her thighs as he parted them and slipped his hips against her. She leaned up and closed her lips over his. He sighed into her mouth, his beard tickling her cheeks as he wrapped her legs around his waist. A deft hand skimmed over her belly button and between her thighs, the thumb ghosting around but never quite touching the little bundle of nerves there. She laughed, gasping, as she shifted her hips, chasing his fingers. He snickered, because apparently he was a tease. "All right, then," she whispered, grasping him in her hand. He yelped softly and dropped his head to her shoulder. "Okay, okay," he whimpered, pinching her lightly and making her cry out. Two long fingers smoothed the way inside her, and her breath came in short pants against his shoulder. He fluttered them inside her, and she gripped him even tighter. He canted into her hand, and the smile against his skin was full of wicked promise. Margot heard the crinkle of a foil packet, and was grateful that she didn't have to argue for one. Kyle paused just before the long, slow slide into her and said, "This may not last long, but what I lack in initial endurance I will make up for in enthusiasm and repeat performances." Margot's answering cackle was stopped short as he thrust home and pulled the blankets over their heads. Chapter 12. Margot stretched out over the soft cotton sheets and groaned, throwing her arm across her eyes to protect them from the morning light. She hadn't slept so soundly since... ever, really. She hadn't dreamed. She hadn't woken up worrying about some random detail for work. She vaguely remembered hearing Kyle's phone ring sometime in the night and him climbing out of bed, but she'd just rolled over and gone back to sleep. This, by itself, was unusual for her. In the city, she'd rarely slept over with any of her dates. She hated the phrase, "hit it and quit it," but she'd generally walked out the door before the sheets cooled. And she'd been careful to keep evenings from ending at her apartment, so she didn't have to worry about awkwardly nudging the guy toward the sidewalk in the morning. She couldn't decide whether her falling asleep so hard that she didn't scoot out the door was a sign of how Kyle had exhausted her. She smiled, pulling the sheets over her face. She should probably have been embarrassed by the demands and sounds she'd made, but she wasn't. While a lot of things about whatever she had with Kyle were complicated, in bed they were deliciously simple and repetitive. She would face the rest another time. Kyle slipped through the bedroom door and shut it behind him. She propped herself up on her elbows, holding one eye closed as she adjusted to the sunlight. "Morning." He stopped and exhaled loudly.
"Something came up late last night, and I don't want to be rude, but..."
A cheerful voice called down the hall. "Daddy?" Margot gasped, and contemplated throwing the blankets over her head again. Kyle tossed her a worn blue plaid flannel robe that smelled like him. Margot scrambled into it, belting it over her shirt and panties.
"Just don't panic and we can get through this," he said.
"Okay." "Daddy!" Margot's eyes went wide as the bedroom door swung open and Hazel bounced in. Margot tugged the belt just a tiny bit tighter. Hazel skidded to a halt, the tiniest bit of scowl mixed with a surprise on her face. Kyle grimaced.
"Hi, Miss Margot. Did you have a sleepover with Daddy last night?"
Oh, Margot looked up at Kyle, silently begging him to give her some appropriate information to impart to his daughter. His face went blank, as if he was mentally transporting himself to a magical place where he wasn't getting caught with a girl in his bed like a naughty teenager. That was decidedly unhelpful. "What happened to not panicking?" Margot asked. Kyle cleared his throat.
"Margot came by to visit because she knew I would be lonely without you girls here."
Hazel lifted a dark eyebrow and turned to Margot.
"Really?"
Margot pursed her lips and nodded.
"Mm-hmm."
Hazel woke up sick to her tummy around 4 this morning, Kyle said, giving Margot a significant look. I couldn't wake you up. You are a very heavy sleeper. Margot blanched at the note of accusation in his voice. I'm sorry. I'm usually a very light sleeper. I must have really dropped off. Kyle's lips pressed together in a thin line. Margot's mouth assumed a similar pose. This was not good.
You stayed all night? Hazel asked.
Margot glanced at Kyle, who seemed to be frozen in horror.
Mm-hmm.
Hazel patted her hand solemnly.
That's better than I did. I had to call Daddy to come pick me up.
Oh, well, that happens to everybody, Margot assured Hazel, who was tugging her away from the bed and down the hall. Margot walked carefully, trying to keep Kyle's robe from flapping open and revealing her pantsless state. When I was a kid, I had to call my father to get me from Brittany Lowell's slumber party because we watched a really scary movie, and I didn't want to be there anymore. But I told everybody I had a headache and needed to go home to get some medicine.
Did anybody make fun of you? Hazel asked.
No, Margot told her, glancing away. And in a way, it was true. No one made fun of her for leaving the party. But Mother wouldn't just let her go to bed. She questioned her like it was a job, demanding details. Was she really sick? Had someone said something mean to her? Had someone on the Lowell's household staff done something inappropriate? But even at age 9, she'd known it didn't come from a place of motherly concern. Linda was looking for something to hold over the Lowells. Hazel plopped down at the kitchen table, interrupting her train of thought.
Was Mr. Stan mad at you when he had to come pick you up in his pajamas?
Kyle pulled his chair away from the table and pressed a mug of coffee into Margot's hand. She took an experimental sip and was pleased that a beverage in Lake Sackett didn't threaten to melt her esophagus. Kyle began moving around the stove, grabbing pans and canisters and mixing bowls. Hazel tugged at her sleeve, asking impatiently,
Miss Margot, did Mr. Stan get mad when he had to come get you from the sleepover?
Oh, it wasn't Mr. Stan, Margot said, shaking her head. This was when I lived in Chicago. I didn't know Mr. Stan back then.
But I thought Mr. Stan was your daddy.
Kyle glanced up from the stove, where he was pouring batter onto a griddle pan. Margot took a deep drink of her coffee to stall for time.
Well, my mom moved away with me when I was really little, and I didn't get to meet Mr. Stan until a couple of months ago. I had what you might call a bonus dad.
Was your bonus daddy nice?
Civil and distant could still be considered nice, right? Margot smiled. Sure he was.
So, does he live with you now? Hazel asked.
Actually, he lives in England now.
Where Queen Elizabeth lives? Hazel exclaimed.
Well, not in the same neighborhood or anything, but he lives in London, yes, Margot said. Kyle slid a plate full of banana pancakes in front of Hazel.
Hazel went through a princess phase last year and got sort of obsessed with Queen Elizabeth. She did a class presentation on her. She did a book report on a Queen Elizabeth biography for kids. She dressed up as Queen Elizabeth for Halloween.
You know, there are worse female role models. Any number of former Disney starlets come to mind, Margot said, as Kyle buttered and cut Hazel's pancakes.
Daddy, aren't you going to make Miss Margot something to eat?
Oh, no, Margot said, shaking her head. I couldn't. I'm just going to change. Kyle nodded.
Sounds good.
Margot practically ran for the bedroom. Throwing on her clothes, she could practically hear her own angry lecture in her head. She'd never dated a single father, precisely because she wanted to avoid awkward situations like this. It wasn't okay for a kid to see her father's date doing the walk of shame. Hazel didn't need to know that she'd slept over. Hazel didn't even need to know her dad was romantically involved with someone until that relationship was serious. Growing up, Margot had seen too many friends faced with a constantly revolving roster of uncles and stepmoms. She knew how confusing and upsetting that was for them. Margo didn't want to give Kyle's girls the wrong impression. This had been a mistake. She'd been an idiot to think she could get involved with a widower without getting entangled in his family life. She wasn't prepared for this. Did she like his children? Yes. Was she ready for a package deal that included the most humiliating pancakes in history? No. Margo caught sight of herself in the mirror and winced. Her hair was a total rat's nest, and she had beard burn in so many places. Kyle met her in the hallway.
So it's probably better if you went home?
As much as it stung, Margo nodded. I was already on my way out.
I'm sorry, I don't want to confuse the girls to make them think there's something more here. I just don't want them to get used to you being around.
Right. Margo swallowed thickly.
I mean, not because... You said it yourself, you're not staying. And I'm not ready. They're not ready. This was just too soon.
Right, please stop explaining. I'll see you around. Tell Hazel...
Don't tell her anything. Never mind.
He leaned close, hesitating before his lips could touch hers. She pulled back and followed his line of sight over her shoulder to Hazel. She was watching the scene with a little furrow of worry between her brows. Margot's heart squeezed at the expression, remembering that little line as something she'd seen in her own reflection as a girl. Always worrying, never comfortable, never sure of her place. Margot stepped back from Kyle.
Goodbye, Hazel. Have a good day.
You too,
she said, turning back to the kitchen.
Before you go, I got you something, Kyle said, reaching into the coat closet and pulling out a small silver gift bag. I was going to give it to you last night, but we got distracted.
Oh, I couldn't.
I found it online, he said,
as she opened the bag to find a box labeled Urban Soundscape Sleep Machine.
Normally, people want nature sounds, the ocean, crickets, that sort of thing. But this one sounds like traffic, or sirens, or any sort of city noise you want.
Thank you. That is very sweet, she told him. It's one of the nicest presents anyone has ever given me.
And sadly, it was.
She couldn't remember the last time a man had given her a gift that she needed. Something he put thought into and purchased based on something she'd said. Her previous lovers usually stuck with the flashy items like flowers and jewelry. She felt a weird, warm rush of something in her chest and pressed the heel of her hand to her sternum. Was this what a heart attack felt like?
I'll call you,
he said absently, glancing over his shoulder.
Mm-hmm,
she said, scooting out the door as quickly as possible. Margo speed-walked to her truck, climbing into the driver's seat and wincing at the stiff ache in her thighs. And that just brought up mental images of all the things she and Kyle had done the night before. Things that she wouldn't be doing again anytime soon because she was pretty sure she'd just received a very firm brush-off from a man who had no interest in presenting her to his daughters as a long-term fixture in his life. Which was fine with her, really. Except that it hurt more than she expected. She sighed and bounced her forehead against the steering wheel.
So very complicated.
Several evenings later, Margo opened the front door to her cabin while talking on her cell phone and found Frankie and Marianne standing in her kitchen, putting frozen orange juice concentrate, blue gummy bears, and vodka into her blender. Margo dangled her house key from her keychain and threw her arm up as if to say, "Why do I bother?" Frankie and Marianne both shrugged in response and continued with their amateur mixology experiment.
Manny, listen to me. I know that you don't do pro bono work. I wouldn't ask you to work for free, especially in this big of a rush. I'm asking you to work at a discount. A deep, deep discount.
Marianne winced.
So I'm not going to remind you of how I introduced you to all of my clients in the charitable circles so you could climb out of the super saver coupon basement and into the world of high-end printables, despite the fact that your office is located in the boonies.
I'm 40 minutes outside of Chicago, Margot.
Same thing. And I'm not even going to remind you of the time your nephew-slash-unpaid intern decided it would be hilarious to add extra Fs to the presentation folders for the Chicago Endowment for the Arts, and I managed to catch them before they were distributed at CEA's annual luncheon. Frankie's mouth dropped open into a delighted O, and she silently clapped her hands. It was an odd contrast to her grumpy cat t-shirt. Margot rolled her eyes at her cousin and grinned. I will simply remind you that we're friends, and friends do favors for each other, especially when reciprocated favors are long overdue. On the other end of the line, Manny sighed.
You just had to bring up the endowment for the farts, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Margot shrugged out of her suit jacket and put it into her tiny closet, along with her shoes. Marianne handed her a frosted glass full of orange slush topped with a layer of floating blue bits. Margot took a sip of the tart, delicious blend, trying her hardest to steer her lips around the cold, chewy orbs of gummy candy. She loved her cousins, but there were limits. Behind Marianne, Frankie held up a DVD copy of Sharktopus vs. Whale Wolf. Margot shook her head vehemently. Frankie pouted. Marianne held up a copy of The Vow. Margot shook her head just as hard. Marianne pouted. While this pantomime played out, Manny was still speaking.
You're asking a lot, honey. Four-color glossy for seven different brochures? You know that's a chore.
But they're short runs, Manny. And I'm uploading the files to your FTP site as we speak. I did all the design work myself, and they've already been proofed. I just need you to hit print. I'll drive to Moncrief myself to pick them up. And you know I hate Moncrief. Manny exhaled through his nostrils. Loudly. It's going to help a lot of people, Manny, she added.
Ah, okay. But I'm using these as a tax write-off, Margot.
I will swear an affidavit that you are Moncrief's foremost humanitarian.
I miss you, doll. None of the girls at Elite Elegance give me nearly as much shit as you do.
I prefer to think of it as challenging you, emotionally and morally, she said.
That too. Talk to you soon, okay?
Absolutely. Love to Maria and the kids. Ending the call, Margot drank a good portion of her grown-up slushy, blue bits and all, and raised it in victory. I don't want to be obnoxious right now, but I am amazing, Frankie said. So that's what you're like in your natural habitat.
What do you mean?
Well, usually you're uncertain and edgy in that lion with a thorn in his paw sort of way. But you couldn't have been more self-assured just now. Like Jesus himself had come down and said, order as many brochures as you want, Margot, Marianne said. I just get the feeling that's more you than you've been since you got here. Does Jesus really involve himself in printing orders? Margot asked. Also, why do I even bother locking the door if you two are just going to break in and abuse my small appliances?
We don't know, really, Frankie said. Everybody knows where the spare keys are.
Also, why gummy bears? Margot asked, holding up her drink.
We were going for an alcoholic bubble tea sort of thing. But tapioca is disgusting, Frankie told her.
Margot shrugged. On this, we agree.
So you're really kicking ass and taking names. I don't want to say I was totally right, emotionally blackmailing you into helping with the festival. I let other people say that for me, Marianne said, nodding toward the large corkboard Margot had tacked to her living room wall.
The corkboard meticulously outlined Margot's overhaul of the festival plans, focusing on bringing tourists into Lake Sackett. She'd arranged for boat tours where participants would be subtly routed to see all the shoreside inns, marinas, and restaurants while enjoying Lake Sackett's scenic beauty. Hay rides would show the visitors the more land-bound locations where they could deposit their money. She'd added a Taste of Lake Sackett event over the weekend, so local restaurants could make a little extra cash and get some free marketing. The usual carnival company set up their rides and games on the school grounds, but Margot had offered them a higher percentage of the gate to give local products as prizes instead of the traditional cheap stuffed animals and trinkets. If the participants somehow managed to win at ring toss, they would get a small plant from Nan's nursery, cookies from the bakery, or a sample from the jerky jamboree. The children had their own dedicated stage. The signs were ordered and matched, as opposed to homemade glittery crazy quilt signage. The vendors were ruthlessly bound by their contracts. "This is just like planning a party," Margot assured them. "A really big party."
"If I move this note card, will you freak out and start cursing?" Frankie asked, reaching out for the card listing the order of the children's presentations with a teasing smirk. "I wouldn't test her," Marianne muttered out of the side of her mouth.
Frankie shrugged and unwrapped a tray of deviled eggs and little baked sausage balls, setting them out on Margot's counter.
"A love offering from Tootie," Frankie said, tossing the cling wrap away with a flourish. "She wants to make sure we have something in our stomachs to soak up the booze."
"I am a little protective of the board," Margot admitted, taking her hair out of its careful chignon. "I know it sounds paranoid, but I was afraid that Sarah Lee would break into my office and try to change things. Bless her heart."
"Oh, no, that's reasonable," Marianne assured her,
"especially after you wouldn't let her take over at the parent workday. Sarah Lee's warpath has gotten that much steeper."
Margot groaned and scrubbed her hand over her face.
"It did not go well," she admitted.
It could go less well, Margot knew, if she discussed some of the discrepancies she'd found in the previous year's records. She'd come across spending patterns and receipts that just didn't make any sense. But she was keeping her theories to herself until she had sorted through all of Sarah Lee's files.
"Well, Sarah Lee has moved on to trying to convince the local businesses that you're going to screw the pooch something awful, and they'll lose money on the festival. She tried to get on the agenda at the Chamber of Commerce meeting, but Uncle Bob told her personal attacks didn't count as new business," Marianne said.
"She's too late. I made all the vendors sign contracts.
But I'll touch base with them, reassure them in my sweetest Sunday tones that I truly appreciate every little bit of their help."
The last sentence was Margot's best imitation of the molasses-thick accents of her neighbors.
"That wasn't bad," Marianne told her. "Just try to ease back on the twang a little bit. That's more of a Tennessee-Kentucky thing. Also, speaking of contracts, here are those papers you asked about for Aunt Tootie."
Margot accepted a manila folder full of forms marked with the Sackett County seal.
"Thanks. This is going to be a huge help." "And in another awkward segue, speaking of vendors, you might want to talk to Bud down at the bakery," Frankie said. "He's closing up shop."
"Oh, no. He was supposed to provide cupcakes for the festival's opening ceremonies," Margot cried. "And prize cookies."
"Well, he's still closing. He's getting older. His sales have been on the downswing for years, and his son is an idiot. It would be pointless to put Bud Jr. in charge of a business that would burn down within a month. He just can't make it work anymore."
"That's so sad," Marianne said.
"But yes, Bud Jr. is an idiot."
"I'll talk to him, make sure he'll honor the sales contract," Margot replied, writing herself a note on a post-it and pinning it to the to-do section of the board.
"More and more businesses are going to close down if tourism doesn't pick up," Frankie sighed. "We're going to end up like one of those creepy ghost towns in horror movies, where the only buildings not boarded up are the police station and the shop of a questionable mechanic who has no intention of fixing your car so you can get out to a safe distance."
"As the wife of the town's mechanic, shut your face," Marianne told her.
"The mechanic is always questionable,"
Frankie insisted, while Marianne made a rude gesture. The trio sat at the tiny kitchenette table and enjoyed their drinks and snacks, debating their DVD choices.
"Frankie, I love you, but I don't think I can sit through another movie where a shark gets sucked into a weather system,
Or crossbred with another animal, creating an F.U. science hybrid? Marianne told her cousin. Frankie gasped, affronted, and turned to Margot, who shook her head. Why do tornadoes only affect sharks? Why not a squid-nado or a dolphin-nado?
Because people would be happy if a bunch of adorable dolphins were dropped into their backyards. I'm pretty sure that's the plot to Free Willy,
Frankie protested. It's really not, Margot told her. Frankie rolled her eyes to the fullest extent her thick mascara would allow.
Okay, fine. I will watch one non-Nicholas Sparks movie with Ryan Gosling in it. Yay!
Margot and Marianne chorused.
If Margot spills all the gory details of her tawdry affair with the school principal,
Frankie finished. It's not tawdry. I don't even know what that means, Margot spluttered.
Everyone in town knows you two have taken up together, Marianne said, prodding her ribs. Tootie and Aunt Leslie are already planning your wedding cake.
Everybody? Margot groaned. But we've been so careful and discreet.
Well, not as careful as you think.
Sweet Johnny practically swoons when she talks about the looks you two send each other during the planning committee meetings, Frankie said slyly.
And Hutch Gershaw was running crappie jigs last weekend and saw the funeral home truck parked out in front of Kyle's house at 6 in the morning.
Margot slumped against the table and buried her face in her hands.
That was one time.
Also, Nate came home the other day and asked when his Aunt Margot could come have a sleepover at our house because Hazel told all the kids at school that you'd had a sleepover at her house, and Nate didn't think that was fair.
Margot's forehead thunked against the table, while Frankie cackled. Marianne patted her shoulder.
Welcome to small town dating. There are no secrets.
So everybody knows. Even those judgmental church ladies in Tootie's card group? Sarah Lee? My father?
Most likely, Marianne said. Aw, hon, it's not a big deal. Most people are pleased for you both. And those that aren't?
Well, screw 'em. Margot thunked her head on the table again.
This seems like more than embarrassed head thunking, Frankie said. Is there something you want to talk about?
Margot mumbled a string of indistinguishable sounds into the wood. Marianne smirked.
What was that?
I don't know what I'm doing, Margot said. I don't think we're dating in a traditional sense, but I'm not quite a booty call. It was going so well the other day, and then Hazel came home early from her slumber party, and I was wearing her dad's robe, and it was just so awkward. And then Kyle basically tossed me out of the house, which hurt. But I can't really blame him because his girls have lost enough, as it is, and they shouldn't see him dating. Plus, I don't know how to talk to children anyway, and that just makes it worse. I just don't know how to navigate this. I am unprepared.
Do you want to date Kyle in the traditional sense?
I don't know. He's funny and smart and kind of drives me crazy, but in that intellectually challenging way I like so much. I've never met a man who can manage as much chaos as I do, and I find that attractive in a slightly disturbing way. And he feels things and lets me know what those feelings are. He doesn't hide them behind a glib mask that lets him keep his dignity. He doesn't sugarcoat it, even when it would be better for both of us. And that is so
endearing.
Frankie suggested.
Sensitive?
Marianne added.
Bizarre!
Margot barked. Even though I know it's coming, it catches me off guard every time. There are times when I think a little sugarcoating would be nice.
So why wouldn't you want to date him?
For one thing, I don't have a lot of experience with real relationships. Not the kind that are meant to go anywhere. And for another, there are his kids.
What about them?
I don't know anything about kids. I've never dated anyone with kids. I don't know how to act around them. I definitely don't know how to take care of them. I've killed off so many houseplants, my assistant at my last job gave me plastic cacti to keep in my office. Marianne patted Margot's hand.
But Hazel and Juniper seem to like you, from what the boys tell me, Marianne assured her. And if I can keep Nate alive for 7 years, you can supervise 2 well-behaved kids who want to impress you. Frankie grimaced. Besides, his girls are part of who he is. That's his life. Trying to divide up that life into parts you can manage and ignore the rest, that doesn't work, Margot muttered. That sounds oddly similar to something he said. So, if you're thinking of dating Kyle, does that mean you're not going to be bolting out of town like your ass is on fire? Marianne asked. It's possible, Margot admitted. But that has nothing to do with Kyle. It turns out I'm unmarketable to employers who are not related to me. Yay! Frankie cried. I mean, sad for you, but yay for us! You could be less thrilled about my inability to find work, Margot told her. I don't think so, Frankie said, shaking her head so her pigtails jiggled. Keep it up, and I will vote for the notebook, Margot told her. Frankie slapped her hands over her eyes. No! And, of course, the moment Margot began to accept that she might be staying in Lake Sackett, she got a nibble on one of the dozens of resumes she'd sent into the professional ether. She was sitting at her desk in the funeral home, gloating over the completed forms for the very first funeral service she had planned from start to finish, including selling the casket and arranging for the grave excavation. She had mastered all the paperwork, managed to give the bereaved Jenkins family comfort and help during their planning process, and sold a bright pink sparkle finish Duchess casket at a deep discount for 82-year-old Maygene Jenkins, who had adored all things pink and rhinestone covered since her childhood. The glittery satin-lined casket made her family smile, and that had made Margot happy, knowing that she was doing this weird family job well. That self-satisfied grin was still plastered across her face when she answered her desk phone. McCready Family Funeral Home and Bait Shop, how may I help you?
Funeral home and bait shop? That's really a thing? I thought that was a typo,
a female voice drawled on the other end of the line. I'm sorry?
I was trying to reach Margot Carey, the caller said. She listed this number on her resume.
Yes, ma'am, this is she, Margot said, a little flutter of anticipation taking wing in her belly. How can I help you?
Well, aren't you charming, the voice declared. I wouldn't expect that sort of southern syrup in a Chicago gal.
Oh, my family's from Georgia. I've been spending a lot of time with them lately, so I guess the niceties are rubbing off on me. I'm sorry to ask, but who's calling, please?
Where are my manners? The woman cackled. This is Ray Temple, the R in RAB events in Dallas. I'm head of corporate shindigs.
Margot lifted her brow. She vaguely remembered filling out an online application to RAB through JobLink during one of her late-night submission binges in Chicago.
Yes? Margot squeaked. Well, we just had a position open in my division, and your name was at the very top of our callback list. How would you feel about doing a Skype interview in the next few days? And if that goes well, we can fly you down here for a face-to-face chat.
Of course, that would be great, Margot said, working hard to keep her voice from trembling as an unwelcome thought occurred to her. She cleared her throat.
Are you sure you have the right Margot Carey? There isn't some other Margot K-E-R-R-Y that's supposed to get this phone call, is there?
Ray snickered.
No, hon. We tend to do a pretty thorough background check on our applicants before we call them.
Margot sighed.
Oh, so you know about the birds? Oh, sweetheart, that was the funniest thing I've ever seen. We have you-themed gifts on file to attach to inter-office emails when we're afraid we're getting too serious.
Ms. Temple, is this a joke interview? Margot asked carefully. Because I don't think I could handle another one of those.
No, no, we'd love to have you, Ray exclaimed.
We'd be lucky to get someone who can wrangle shrimp-crazed birds with one hand and call 911 with the other. That sort of disaster happens all the time in our business. You've got people drinking too much when they don't have enough food in them while wearing uncomfortable shoes and trying to impress each other. That's a recipe for disaster. Besides, it's not considered a party down here until someone falls into a pool wearing a $5,000 cocktail dress. The difference is we see the humor in it. And we appreciate someone who can handle those situations quickly, without losing her damn mind and making it worse. You've got style, and you've got grit. And we need both. What kind of people have you been dealing with up there, darling? Margot actually felt her eyes tear up a bit. All this time, she'd assured herself that one disaster didn't negate her entire career, that she still had talent. But she'd needed to hear it from someone in her industry. She didn't know what that said about her as a person. She was sure it had something to do with chasing the approval of her difficult-to-please mother and absent father, or some Freudian bear trap that would cost her thousands at the therapist's office. But, for right now, she was just grateful not to feel that crushing disappointment in herself. "Thank you. That is the first time I've heard that," she said. "I haven't had a callback on an application in months." "Well, isn't that lucky for us, then? Look, I'll send you the details for the Skype interview to your email address. And really, we're interested in working with you, Margot, as long as you think you might like the culture around here. Give moving to Texas some serious thought." "I will," she promised. "Thank you." Margot hung up the phone and covered her mouth to contain the ecstatic squeal that would have raised the nearby dead. After months of nothing, she had an interview with someone who sounded like a reasonable employer. The life she'd been trying to steer back onto the tracks ever since the night of the flamingos was finally coming back together. She could live in a city again. She would have access to more than one grocery store and dependable cell coverage and not have to worry about possums breaking into her garbage. Or worry about Sasquatch as a real possibility instead of possums. She would be herself again. As her eyes landed on the McCready family funeral home and bait shop stationery stacked on her desk, that euphoric thrill ebbed from her chest. She could be leaving this place. What would she tell her family? They would be so hurt that she was leaving, after everything they'd done to make her part of their lives. She couldn't have that easy, comfortable relationship with Marianne and Frankie over Skype. She'd prove everyone who said she was just like her mother right. Her father wasn't as much of a consideration. The progress she'd hoped for with him just wasn't happening. Oh, hell. What would she tell Kyle? The fragile green shoots of whatever sort of relationship she shared with her favorite principal would collapse under the pressure of a nebulous long-distance relationship. He wouldn't want to be with someone who was a fly-by-night presence in his girls' lives, confusing them even further. She would have to start all over again, just after she'd become comfortable in the life she'd started in Lake Sackett. Margot slumped down in her chair and for the first time ever said, "Dang it." Chapter 13. Margot stood at Kyle's front door on a bright, cloudless Saturday morning, debating whether to knock. In her hands, she held the finalized schedule for the student presentations at the History Pavilion. It was an excuse, really, to talk to Kyle, to casually drop into conversation that she could be leaving town, and gauge his reaction to that. Ray had set up the Skype interview for the following week. Margot hoped that if she ended up being offered the job, she would be able to negotiate a start date after the festival. Though it seemed impossible, the festival had taken on even more importance after Uncle Bob reported the Chamber of Commerce's totals for summer tourism. The town's visitor numbers were down 8% from the previous year, and more than 15% from 5 years before. Rental income was down for the third year running. And Harley Ramsett, owner of one of the biggest boat rental companies in town, was thinking about closing, taking 10 jobs and an incredible amount of tourist appeal with him.
Sarah Lee had used the Lake Sackett Ledger's coverage of these grim numbers to try to wrest control of the festival out of Margot's hands, a whopping 2 weeks before opening ceremonies. She'd called an emergency meeting of the PTA to ask members to sign a petition to fire Margot. Fortunately for Margot, volunteers couldn't be fired, and only 10 people signed the petition, all of them Sarah Lee's cronies. So, for now, she still held the reins to what could be the biggest show in town. She did notice, however, that her card got declined more often than not at local businesses owned by Sarah Lee's friends. And all 4 of her tires seemed to go flat every time she parked her truck in town. Carl, bless him, had put an air pump behind the bench seat so she could blow them back up without his help. She'd almost retracted her hand and decided to silently scuttle back to the truck when Juniper opened the front door, wearing sparkly purple tights, neon green Crocs, and an orange life vest. Margot lifted a brow. "Is there a flood warning, or is the life vest a fashion statement?" Margot asked.
"We're going sailing today, Miss Margot,"
Juniper cried, grabbing Margot's hand and dragging her into the house.
"It's the last sail of the season before we have to put the boat up for winter. We do it every year. Daddy always packs a special lunch, and we have a picnic on the fairy island."
"Wow, that sounds great."
"Juniper." "June!"
"That sounds great, June. But maybe I should just come back another time." Margot tried to back away toward the front door, but June's grip on her wrist became teamster tight.
"No!"
she howled.
"You should come with us. Please. It's always more fun when another grown-up comes with us because Daddy doesn't worry about us falling out of the boat when he's working the lines."
"Does that happen a lot?" Margot asked, as June locked the front door, then dragged Margot through the house to the back door, looking over the water. June threw the sliding glass door open with the force of someone who had never made home insurance payments and screeched,
"Daddy! Miss Margot is here!"
"Your ability to speak in all caps is astonishing," Margot told June, who just grinned at her. Down at the family's dock, Kyle's head popped up behind the hull of the little sailboat. He appeared to be stowing ropes in a small hold at the front of the boat, while Hazel was untying the knots that kept the sail tightly rolled. He smiled and waved at Margot as June yanked her down the length of the dock by her wrist. How could someone that small be that strong? Kyle hopped gracefully over the hull and landed on the dock with both feet. He was wearing jeans and the green utility jacket he'd had on the first time she saw him. The sight of the jacket kick-started a warm flicker in her chest that she tamped down by remembering that Kyle's children were standing right there, and it would not do to ogle their father right in front of them, even if they wouldn't realize it was happening. Probably. Maybe a little ogling wouldn't hurt. No. Margot broke eye contact and stared at the sailboat. It was even prettier up close. She knew very little about these things, but it seemed well cared for with its glossy wood and polished brass fittings. It was the sort of thing constructed in what Tootie would have wistfully described as the good old days, when everything was built to last. A careful hand had painstakingly painted Maggie's Little Trees on the bow in gold and white.
"June, honey, we've talked about trying to dislocate people's shoulders," he told her, though his tone wasn't at all stern. "It's not nice."
Margot's lips twitched as June reluctantly loosened her death grip.
"Sorry,"
June mumbled. She brightened considerably in less than a second.
"Guess what, Daddy? Miss Margot is going to come with us."
Kyle glanced up at Margot, and she shook her head back and forth. "Oh, I don't think so. I mean, look at me. I'm not dressed for sailing." The family looked at her jeans and light green sweater, combined with the only pair of sneakers she'd brought with her to Lake Sackett. Kyle asked dryly,
"You're afraid you'd end up turning an ankle in those fancy shoes?"
"My sweater is very absorbent," Margot said, clearly searching for an excuse. "It would weigh me down if I went in the water.
Also, you weren't planning to feed me, and I don't want to make lunch too sparse.
No, no. Dad always packs a few extra sandwiches and drinks because we drop them in the water. Please,
June begged. Margot grimaced. I don't think so. You're welcome to come with us, Kyle said, though his tone clearly meant the opposite. Oh, I couldn't.
Please,
June cried, making big anime eyes at her. Okay, Margot said, through an uncomfortable smile. But I just want to point out that this is how Gilligan's Island started.
Get in the boat,
June said, pushing at Margot's hip until she stepped onto the bow. Kyle was quick to take her hand and help her on board without falling into the lake. The boat pitched a bit under her feet, and she stumbled into Kyle. He gave her a light squeeze before picking June up under the arms and setting her down on one of the bench seats by the tiller. Kyle looped a thin, narrow life vest around Margot's neck and clipped it closed. It inflates when it hits the water, he told her. It's a little easier to move around in than the neck pillows for the kids. This is some sort of practical joke, isn't it? I'm being filmed.
Just wear it, he said, and sit there where you won't get smacked with the boom.
She nodded. Will do. Not getting hit in the face with a sail is a big priority in my life. Margot sat next to Hazel, who was also wearing a colorful but mismatched outfit topped off with a bright orange life vest. She gave a half-hearted flick of her hand.
Hi, Miss Margot.
Hi, Hazel. Kyle asked.
Everybody ready?
Aye, aye, Captain,
June cried, as Kyle cast off lines and bustled around the boat doing things Margot didn't quite understand.
Everybody got their life vests buckled?
Aye,
the girls yelled. Kyle helped June pull the cord for a small motor that pushed them away from the dock. Margot gripped the edge of the hull, and the sailboat shot forward. This boat seemed so much less stable than the pontoon. While this was clearly something the Archer family enjoyed, Margot thought she preferred the room and stability of a pontoon. Once the boat had cleared the Archer's little inlet, Kyle cut the engine and pulled a cord that tightened the sail. The boat pitched forward again, diving into a wake. June squealed as the sailboat skimmed across the surface. Even Hazel was grinning like mad. The colors of the other boats, the happy shouts, the sunlight sparkling over the water. What would it have been like to grow up doing this as a family? Would she and Stan have taken boat trips like this on the weekends? Would she have learned how to bait her hook properly from Stan? Or would Linda have hauled her to Atlanta every weekend for museums and ballet? No, it wasn't likely, given her parents' marriage. And she didn't want to think about that right now. She wanted to focus on feeling good for once. Margot turned her face into the wind and closed her eyes. She was right. This did feel like flying.
So, what brings you to my door on a Saturday so my daughters can kidnap you into a family outing?
Margot's jaw fell open, something she remedied immediately when a bug nearly flew into her mouth. She wanted to tell him everything. She had a job interview. She could be leaving town. She wasn't sure that she'd still be around for the festival and was doing her best to have everything ready so Sarah Lee couldn't derail it all if and when Margot left town. But she couldn't. They were on the water, and the girls were so happy, and Kyle looked so relaxed and content. She couldn't ruin that. Their family didn't have enough of these happy moments. Besides, if he got angry, she didn't have anywhere to go except over the edge of the boat. Oh, I just brought some papers by for you. The finalized list of the kids' events, she said as he sat next to her. He kept the guide for the tiller in his hand, holding their path straight across the width of the lake. So what's the fairy island?
It was Maggie's favorite island when she was a kid. She used to take a little rowboat out there on sunny afternoons and read under the trees. She said that she felt like the queen of her own fairy kingdom on that island. And the girls get a kick out of looking for fairies while we're out there.
That's sweet.
We do this every year. Maggie's birthday is this week, he explained quietly. It's hard to explain to the girls sometimes,
I mean, they understand in the abstract, I think, but tying it in with the final sale seems to help. And I've intruded. I'm so sorry. No, it's nice. Having another adult here who understands what I'm trying to do. Maggie's parents came for a couple of years, but I think it hurt too much. It's nice having you here. Part of that decompartmentalizing thing. Thanks, she said. Margot relaxed against the seat, listening to June's excited chatter. Even with the cooling weather, there were some boats on the water. Margot spotted Duffy on the pontoon, with a group of older gentlemen fully outfitted in the flashiest fishing gear. He waved and grinned so wide she could see it from yards away. Margot and the girls waved back. Hazel warmed up slowly, enjoying the fact that she had to explain the parts of the sailboat to Margot.
Jam cleat? Sail ticklers?
Hazel said, pointing to the various parts of the boat.
Gooseneck?
You're making this up, Margot said, scrunching up her face, making Hazel giggle.
Kyle, what are those ribbons up on the sail called?
Sail ticklers,
Kyle said, grinning at her.
Told you,
Hazel cried. Who comes up with these names?
Weirdos,
June told her solemnly. They traveled the length of the lake before finally entering one of those little pronged inlets. Near the shore were several small islands, barely big enough to support grass and a few trees. The largest was closer to the lake proper, and roughly the shape of a kidney. Several scrubby trees shaded the mossy terrain. Kyle anchored the boat and tethered it to one of the thicker trees. The hull settled easily against the muddy knoll of the island, allowing the passengers to hop off onto land. It was quiet here, away from the engines of the fishing boats and the wind. Scraps of ribbon, some only slightly faded, others bleached bone white by time and sun, hung from the branches overhead.
"Mommy started hanging these up when she was little," Hazel told her while Kyle unpacked their lunch. "For the fairies. We hang more every year on the last sail."
"Fairies do like their colorful decorations," Margot said, as Hazel nodded.
"Will you rebraid my hair?"
June asked, handing Margot a brush from her backpack. The wind had done a number on June's braid, leaving her with a halo of flyaways. Margot grimaced. She'd never really braided anyone's hair but her own, and she wasn't great at that. Her own hair was so fine it slipped when she tried to maneuver it. She wasn't sure her hands would remember how to do it from a different angle. But she dragged the brush through Juniper's thick, sandy hair, careful not to catch her ears. The tangles were insane. But June didn't whine once as Margot worked through them. She separated the fall of blonde into three sections and began twisting them into a simple braid.
"When you don't live here, do you live in a big city like Daddy came from?"
"Yes," Margot said, frowning at her uneven braiding and undoing her work to start over. "It wasn't as big as the city your dad came from, but it's superior in many ways. Many, many ways." Kyle cleared his throat in an exaggerated fashion as he spread an oilcloth on the ground.
"Don't lie to my children."
Margot smirked at him, but before she could answer, June was firing more questions at her.
"Did you ride a subway? Did you go to museums with dinosaur bones? Did you live in a big, tall building?"
"Yes, but we called the subway the L train."
"Do you miss it?"
"I miss some parts of it. I miss things that you can't get here, like sushi and reliable internet. But there are things I like about this place."
"Like what?"
Margot considered her answer as she tied off the passable braid with a hair elastic. "Fireflies? We get fireflies in Chicago, but you can't always see them because there are too many lights. And Aunt Leslie's deep-fried things. And my cabin. I like my cabin."
"And my daddy?"
Margot looked up to find Kyle smirking in return.
"Your daddy is something I like, yes." "Well, be still my beating heart," he drawled, pressing a hand over his chest.
"So you're not going to go back?"
Hazel asked,
watching Margot's face carefully. Margot's lips parted to give an answer, but the breath remained trapped in her throat. Kyle frowned and tugged gently on Hazel's ponytail.
Lunch is ready.
The girls scrambled over to the picnic blanket to chow down on peanut butter and jellies, lemonade, and pink frosted cupcakes. But Hazel's unanswered question